damn it! I get it!
This crap. It's terrible.
I was titillated.
I know you want to go.
No, I slept with like 3 girls a night and no one ever said anything.
Dude!
Oh god, you guys are disgusting.
Boring.
So boring.
That is an amazing film.
Ooh, I love me some Statham.
That's a little bit of brilliance that just came out of your mouth there, Justin. I like it.
Do you want to keep going?
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, geeks of all ages, welcome back to another exciting episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. My name is Justin Cavender, and with me this week is Amanda and David. How the heck are you two doing today?
Good.
Still banging. How you doing?
Ooh, I'm fabulous. Thank you, David.
Welcome.
yeah, Randy will be joining us shortly, assuming he hasn't fallen asleep at the wheel on his way home. But we will hope for the best. And
prepare for the worst.
Prepare for the worst. I get his shit. Amanda, what the heck is going on in the TV news there?
Well, there are a lot of finales happening in the past week or so since we're getting on to the end of May. And one finale in particular that I felt really lived up to the finale fever sort of thing was The Blacklist, which we've been watching pretty regularly. It was mostly sort of like a case of the week type of show, but towards the end of the season, they really started to delve more into the main character, Elizabeth, and her relationship to Red Reddington, played by James Spader. And the finale kind of answered some questions, though left a few questions hanging in the air. I think a lot of people are still wondering if he really is her father, maybe, since one of the last, I think the last thing we see in the episode is him with the burn marks on his back, which would imply that he was there the day that her father supposedly disappeared when her house burnt down.
Mm-hmm.
The fire that, like, she got caught in. But he's told her categorically that he's not her father.
Yeah, and that's kind of bothered me. Because, like, in the first episode, we were under the impression that he was her father. Then right. He goes to the trouble of rebuilding a music box that played a song that she loved when she was a kid.
Right.
And then now the burn marks. And it's like, you know, if you're doing this whole metaphorically speaking Obi-Wan Kenobi from a certain point of view crap, your father died in that fire, then that's just lame.
Well, I've read interviews with the creator, and he says that Red is not her father.
Why is he going through all this trouble to make her think otherwise?
This might be an insane theory, but, like, when Liz was telling the story, she was saying how her mom would sing the song or whatever. So what if her mom is transvestite and became Red Reddington?
Oh.
I don't know. That could be, like, completely insane, but I don't know if America's ready for that kind of storyline or not, but
that's very Twin Peaks.
I know, right?
And his name is Red Reddington?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Alright.
I don't remember Raymond. Enough.
Well, his name is Raymond Reddington, and his code, or his, like...
Oh, sorry.
His nickname is Red.
Yeah. Raymond Reddington. Maybe Ray Reddington? I don't know. Anyway. But what I thought was the most interesting about the episode was how the writers were willing to really... the stakes, you know, because a lot of the time in television, the characters are pretty safe.
Mm-hmm.
We know that people who are around are generally going to stay around, but The Blacklist really created a sense of danger for everyone in that, like, one of the main, or the main bad guy of the series just started going around killing all the people on their team, and he succeeded with one person, and then may have succeeded with another before they caught on and were able to secure the rest of their team and stop him. So you know, we definitely lost one major character and we could lose another. So I felt like that was a very ballsy move on their part.
Absolutely. And people do die in this show. One of his confidants died nine episodes in.
She got her head blown off right in front of him.
Yeah, and then Wrestler's ex-wife was killed, and then obviously Agent Malik, and no one is really safe. Even that one chick, Jolene, I think was her name.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's cool having characters in multiple episodes that end up not making it. And then even the director lady, Diane Fowler or whatever her name was. She got annihilated.
Yeah. She was like their boss.
she got filled with holes. Yeah,
Reddington just like took her out.
Yeah, he's a badass.
I don't care.
Dave, this guy is not afraid of anybody. Well, I take that back. There's only one person he's ever been afraid of, and that was only because he didn't know who they were, and they were able to get to him, and it made him very nervous.
Take an ass and take a name.
Uh-huh. And then he was like total James Bond in this last episode, just showing up and just plugging fools. It was awesome.
G-O-T.
Game of Thrones. Oh my god.
So...
And Sansa's awesome because she slaps that little kid.
Lots of fun stuff on Game of Thrones. Poor Tyrion doesn't have a lot of friends in King's Landing. He goes through his incredibly short list of allies very quickly, only to find that no one's really willing to help do that much for him anymore. Now that his rising star is no longer ascendant. The saddest... It was really sad watching him, you know, try and appeal to Jaime, and it, like, just the way that I think he kind of thought that maybe Jaime would be his champion and then somehow win, even though he lost his dominant hand, which was, on the one hand, it was so like, are you really that out of touch with reality? But then for Tyrion, Jaime's always been his older brother who protected him. And like, Jaime's always made everything all right. But now he can't. And that realization was just a huge blow for him.
Yeah, because it was strange that they like didn't... Because in the book, they have the built-in excuse that like the Kingsguard can't do it. I was surprised that they like made it sound like that it was possible that Jaime could. And that kind of cast Jaime in a bad light, I thought. I mean, he wouldn't win. He got one hand.
Yeah. Well, I think they also wanted to have that moment with Jaime and Tyrion because they actually haven't spent any time together since the first couple episodes of the first season. So this is the first time they've been together in almost the entirety of the show.
Right. When he came and visited him in his cell, whatever, like in third episode. Like,
yeah, two episodes ago.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean like this season. Is the
yeah,
first
yeah.
Time
you're correct.
Yeah. And so they want to better establish like their relationship because they actually do have a very strong bond because Jaime's been the only person in Tyrion's life who's cared about him at all. Like the only member of his family who has actually been there for him to a certain extent. And all Tyrion really wants is for people to just like him, you know, because he's been reviled and hated his entire life. You know, he never had a chance. Like, he was deformed, and his mother died giving birth to him, and so everyone hated him, including the people who were supposed to be there to protect him. Especially the people who were supposed to be the ones to protect him. And that, actually, that theme is also kind of echoed with the Hound and the Mountain. You know, they're introducing the Mountain back into the show again. And for those of you who've been paying attention, yes, the actor playing the Mountain has been different every single time that the Mountain's been on screen. I don't know why they have to keep recasting him, but it's a completely different guy than it was the first two times. And so now that the Mountain is back, we need a little bit more backstory on like who he is. And, you know, it's not just enough to see him slaughtering a bunch of relatively helpless. Well, we'll call them helpless. They're essentially helpless. Slaughtering these helpless prisoners. We also have to know that he's a psychotic lowlife, which story we get from the Hound, who finally tells Arya that, yes, the burns on his face are from his older brother, like, just pushing his face into the fire. Just to see what would happen.
And, you know, what does that say about Cersei, though, too, when she was just kind of walking over that guy's, like, entrails? She wasn't even, like, paying no never mind. She was just strolling along through the dead bodies to get to the Mountain. That was nuts.
She's cold.
It's a panty dropper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For real.
Bloody intestines on the ground looking like sausages.
Yeah. That was
you
brutal.
Eviscerated that man. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, These two siblings, or you know, from different families, are like the cruelest of the cruel, and they are allying together.
Yeah, tag team.
Scary.
Very scary.
What else was really good?
Gee, I don't know. How about the Eerie?
That was yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
That was so awesome.
Yeah. I really liked it. This was, you know, obviously we know big things are coming, but this was kind of like their character building episode. And even characters I don't normally like I found myself enjoying the Brienne scene. They even brought back Hot Pie.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually enjoyed Brienne. I actually enjoyed Sansa because she slapped Robin. And I was like, oh, I'm actually rooting for Sansa. I thought the stuff with the Hound and Arya was great. I thought the stuff with Tyrion and Jaime. I like their interaction last time probably better when they was Jamie was asking Tyrion if he killed his son or killed his nephew, mm-hmm. and but this one I thought was real good, and even Bronn, like you could tell like he almost was hoping that Tyrion would pull some Tyrion trick to convince him, like he almost seemed like he almost went there to get convinced to help him out, but then just couldn't.
Yeah,
I like you, but I like myself better.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You said you double it. What do you want, two castles?
Yeah, I'm a little short of castles right now. That was nuts. Felt bad. I remember feeling pretty sad, too, in the book. I was like, aw, that's gotta suck.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, who really wants to face the Mountain that rides? I mean, even Jaime with a working hand, that would still be a pretty scary fight.
Yeah. The only
Enter
one
Oberyn wants... Martell.
Yeah, right? The only one who wants to face the Mountain is someone who... is burning for revenge.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like he was kind of hoping things would go this way.
I know.
Like he was just kind of playing his part to get to this point.
Yeah. Well, he's definitely doing that as far as like agreeing to whatever Tywin wanted.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as long as he's agreeable, he gets to stay in King's Landing and then hopefully get his shot at the Mountain, or at least getting some kind of vengeance for his sister.
Yeah. Reparations! Yeah. It's like yelling that in a George voice. Yeah, so that's definitely another thing to talk about, too, how Tyrion's face just lit up like it was Christmas when Oberyn said that he would be his champion.
Yeah. So he has a chance now.
Yeah.
A fighting chance.
Because he's quite the warrior, the Red Viper.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't gotten much of that since he's been spending a lot of time in the brothels, but he's not called the Red Viper for nothing.
Correct.
Have they referred to him as the Red Viper in the show?
I don't think so.
Yeah, like the show's done, like, made a point to, like, almost, like, completely not let us know that he's actually can fight. Toward the book, it's all about like, oh, the renowned Red Viper, you know, this and that, you know, he's mm-hmm. an ass kicker, he does that. Toward in the book, it's, I mean, the movie, in the show, it's almost like they want to like surprise us, and all of a sudden this like man whore loving dude is just all of a sudden going to kick everybody's ass.
Yeah, see, I think that they should have kind of fed us a little bit more info.
Yeah, laid the groundwork.
It seemed more believable that he has a chance to face this guy that everyone's so afraid of if we knew that he's got this long old list of fallen adversaries.
Yeah, not just some dude who's pissed at him.
Yeah.
They're,
that's not a short list.
The only time that they would have brought it up would have been in that first episode.
When he came to town, right?
Yeah, but I can't remember what Tyrion was telling Bronn. I feel like he...
might have said something in passing.
Because well, they're not expecting the Red Viper. They're
expecting... Right, they're not.
Brothers.
Yeah.
And so, and then the Red Viper just goes straight to King's Landing, doesn't even meet with Tyrion and them, and they find him in the brothel, and they talk for like 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting.
Yeah, there needed to... They almost seems like there needed to be a scene between Cersei and Tyrion, or Tyrion and Bronn.
Talking about him?
Yeah, talking about him. Like, it's like, oh, it's a freaking Red Viper. You know, he's pissed at the land. He, or maybe even Tywin saying like he's pissed because he thinks that we raped and killed his sister, and you know, blah 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 blah. And he can fight with a bow staff, spear.
Yay! And that'll be fun.
Yes, it's next episode. Mountain versus the Viper.
How many more episodes have we got this season?
Three.
All right, cool.
Coming up on the end.
We got Trial by Combat, fun King's Landing stuff, and the Wall.
Mm-hmm.
Poor Jon Snow. No one wants to listen to him.
Oh, man. I can't wait for that fucking Alistair to just eat his words. The whole time, I'm just watching him.
Yeah.
I was like, God, I hate this fucking guy. And Janos Slint, too.
Janos Slint,
my God, I hate that little guy, too. I'm like, these fucking guys. They just get on my goddamn nerves.
I mean, really, like, fucking John needs to learn how to play the game. He knows that Alistair Thorne doesn't want to listen to him. So why doesn't he just go talk to someone else who can then talk to Alistair? Cause,
like Maester Aemon.
Yeah, like, ugh.
Or by the same way, I mean, why isn't Alistair, like, taking him seriously? Like, they know an army's coming, you know?
Because he doesn't want to take Jon seriously.
No, but I mean, I know he's a bad man, probably raped and murdered, and that's why he's at the wall. But I mean, he should be able to do simple arithmetic. You know, there's 100 of us. That is not going to go far.
I think it's just like his unthinking reaction is to just shoot down Jon no matter what. It doesn't matter what Jon says.
But I interrupted Justin in his moment of glory. The best ending to an episode of Game of Thrones almost ever.
Yes.
Yes.
The eerie.
If only that could have gone on a little bit longer.
Right. Randy, did you have seen the episode, correct?
I have, yes.
Okay. So that's actually how book three ends, with Littlefinger throwing her out the moon door. And what's different, though, from the book is that there's actually like a bard in the room singing songs. And
he pins it on the bard.
Yeah, he throws her out. Like, fuck off, you stupid, silly woman. I never loved you. You know, the only woman I ever loved. Or I've only loved one woman in this world, and that was your sister. And she's like, what? You know, throwing her out. And then he's like, guards. Then the guards come in. He's like, that man murdered my wife. And it's like, oh, shit. And it's like, Finn, the end. And you're like, this is the best book ever. Oh, my God.
You like the credits.
So that was cool. I remember just my titties shaking. I was laughing so hard. I thought it was so cool. But I don't know how they're going to explain that in the next episode. Like, oh, we were working on his dance routine. And he tripped.
Flip.
That's gonna be a tough sell.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the boy needs to be the next one out of the moon door.
Oh God.
Yeah, that kid's got problems.
Yeah.
That was also when he's like, when he didn't even care that Sansa slapped him. He's like, "Ah, oh, his mother should have done that years ago."
Yeah.
It's awesome. How creepy was that? Need the boy to make it official. He's like, "Hey, why don't you get into my van and we'll go for we'll go park for a while.
Call me Peter."
Oh man.
Like, oh, you could have been my daughter. Oh, you're more beautiful than your mother ever was. Oh, gross.
Oh, I loved it. Gross. I was like, yes.
Well, he couldn't get her mother, so he went for the sister, and now apparently maybe even her.
Oh, he didn't really want the sister.
No, not at all.
But Oh God! Oh, I'm interested to see how he's gonna try and get away with it.
I bet the first guard runs in and he throws him out the door and say, "This guard tried to kill my wife, and I threw him out the window."
Yeah, that would work too. Man, but you know, we learn, especially in book four, we learn that Peter can talk his way out of anything. The man is a total used car salesman, and he just kills it.
Right, and as Sansa learned this episode, he's a real silver-tongued devil.
Mm-hmm. Do anything. What does he say? Something to the effect of, "People that harm the ones you love, you know what?"
What do we do to the ones who hurt the ones we love?
Yeah, exactly.
And he's gonna be Lord of Winterfell.
She's like kind of into it, though.
Yeah, she got off on that.
She treated her nice.
Also, Arya got the news that Joffrey died. I don't think she ever was really privy to that information in the books.
I don't believe so.
I do not recall.
Doesn't she end up?
She doesn't even celebrate
elsewhere in book three.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, though, she doesn't even really celebrate. That's kind of big news. Right. And they don't even. They're just like, "Oh, the king's dead." Blah blah blah. And then, that's it.
Yeah,
she's not like, you know, jumping up and joy or jumping up and down and being all excited.
Well, she's been through some shit, so
I know, but she hates Joffrey.
Yeah,
she couldn't have just been like,
because Joffrey Nymeria is gone.
A little wolf.
She's stabbing motherfuckers right in the heart.
Yeah, and then she cleaned off her blade like the Hound did. How cool is that?
Yeah, I love the Hound stuff, man. I always like the Hound. It's like the kind of like that middle run character. But him and Arya is just killed. I love them together. Yeah, and then she's just kind of picking up like his bad habits, and then he's kind of softening to her and stuff like that.
It's kind of interesting how like she's kind of concerned about him, even though he's on her list of people to kill.
I bet he sacrifices himself for her.
I don't think it's gonna happen.
You think so?
No, he's not really that kind of person.
Yeah, he's got. I bet he tried. Like he tried to save Sansa, and you know he could kill Arya. He could kill Arya at any moment. Arya is just another mouth to feed. You know, mm-hmm. I know he's saying he's doing it for the reward, but you know.
But he even showed, you know, a moment of kindness by just talking to that farmer that was wounded.
That's true.
You know,
before he killed him.
Yeah, I mean, he did give him a drink, but I mean, he was, you know, talking to him and kind of comforting him, and you know, no one wants to die alone, and I mean, he was even down, like, kind of on his knee talking to the man. That's kind of nuts.
Right.
That's a whole new side of the Hound.
Yeah. I think it's great.
I really do, too.
I like the Hound a lot.
And I think the showrunners realize that, too. That the audience definitely has taken a liking to the Hound.
Mm-hmm.
Since he hasn't been recast every season like his brother. I like how everything in the episode was cool except for Daenerys.
Their scene was bad, dude.
It was terrible.
They need to work on the romance there.
Like, what were they thinking?
That was like a speed date that went awful. Right? Wasn't that terrible?
Yeah, he broke in her place, gave her flowers, insulted her, and she's like, "Yeah, let's just do this. It's gonna happen."
Yeah, that just it just seems so out of place.
Hey, women have needs too.
It doesn't even seem like she even likes him, let alone wants to fuck him.
Right.
So, this is my whole problem with Daenerys as a whole right now. How she just doesn't have any chemistry with anybody, and they're not spending enough time. I don't know. Maybe Emilia Clarke needs acting lessons. I don't know what the problem is.
I feel like she's not there on the set. Like, she's like a hologram or something. Like, she's filming all of her lines like somewhere else, and then they intercut her footage with everybody else. Like, it doesn't seem like she's not playing off of anyone. It just seems like she has this one baseline voice, this one baseline look, and they just tell her what direction to look and give her boring speech in, and then everyone else around her does cool shit.
Yeah. I don't know.
Not good.
Boring, boring, boring.
Oh, jeez. What's next? What about the movies? You got any movie news?
Yeah, you were going to tell us how much you loved Godzilla.
Oh, yeah. It was all right. I enjoyed it. I liked it more than Pacific Rim. I can tell you that much.
You're not alone. It made as much in 1 week as Pacific Rim made like its entire lifespan.
Yeah, I was reading a lot of tweets. I got involved on some fucking geek train on Twitter. And I was one of like six people in this series of tweets, and people were going on and on about, you know, watch Godzilla as a rental, you know, Pacific Rim was better. And I had no way of replying to these people because there were so many people in the tweets
involved
that I had there. I would have
three. Didn't have any room
to get my point across. Yeah, so that wasn't going to work. So then I ultimately just said that Godzilla is better than Pacific Rim. The end.
My friends thought that Godzilla was cute.
Yeah, well, he...
Because he has short arms.
He's got this big head and his little arms. Yes, he resonates with the audience. You know, he's...
Man of the people.
Yeah.
Monster of the people.
Yeah, exactly. He's a go-getter, you know?
Yeah. A lot of people are complaining that they say that you didn't see enough Godzilla, but I kind of equate it to like Jaws or Jurassic Park.
Right.
To where, I mean, less is more. And so when you got to see Godzilla, you were like, holy shit. And, you know, Godzilla's got, you know, some tricks up his sleeve. And like when he busts out a couple of them, you're like, holy shit, did I just see that?
Mm-hmm.
And you were pretty happy. I mean, my review's in the site, so you can read it. But I want to hear what Justin thinks.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would have liked to have seen maybe 3 to 5 minutes more of Godzilla screen time, but it's certainly not a deal breaker. I think one of my favorite parts was when the little boy was watching the footage on TV and it just looked like a 1950s monster movie.
Yeah.
I thought that was so awesome. And I was just, the whole theater was pretty much laughing because it looked so silly, but in a good way.
Like, or in Vegas.
How could this be happening? Yeah, like it's just too nuts to believe kind of thing. And that really was neat. And I liked how the whole Pacific Naval Fleet was following Godzilla to San Francisco. I thought that was kind of neat. But yeah, it was good stuff. I enjoyed it. I am looking forward to Godzilla 2, which is apparently already in the
works. Electric Boogaloo?
Yeah, exactly. They're going to breakdance fight. That'll be fun.
Yeah, and I think and Justin and I were talking a while ago about it, that it was nice that Godzilla, you know, everyone knows that Godzilla was a good guy. Like, there was not, like, it wasn't ambiguous.
Ambiguity.
Right. Yeah. There's not going to be some CIA guy in Godzilla 2 that says, oh, we got to stop Godzilla.
Yeah.
It's get Godzilla on the bat phone immediately.
Yeah, quick. Throw up the sign.
Yeah.
It did destroy San Francisco, though. That was a little sad.
Yeah, some checks in the mail. Godzilla will take care of that later. Yeah, because San Francisco got destroyed.
Yeah, it's no longer there.
Yeah, I saw a street sign last week that said, turn back, Godzilla attack.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I'm not sure if, like, the city of San Francisco actually did that, or if someone, like, hacked into that sign and changed it. Knowing San Francisco, it could have gone either way. Next day, it wasn't there anymore. So, or it actually had information on it that it was supposed to have.
What else you got?
There was a couple of fun trailers that got released in the last couple of days. There was a new Transformers trailer. I don't know if you guys had a chance to see that. It came out a couple of days ago. Mm-hmm. It was kind of cool because it showed Hound, who's going to be voiced by John Goodman. Showed him having this big old beard, smoking a cigar. The movie looks, you know, if you're on board, you're on board. If you're not on board, you're not on board. You know, the plot sounds a lot like the plot from the last one, you know, where we're all going to die. But, yeah, oh, well, it is what it is. But the two trailers I'm more excited for were the trailers for Interstellar, Christopher Nolan's new movie, and for Guardians of the Galaxy. And I hope you guys have seen them both. Has everyone seen them?
Yay!
No,
I knew it. God damn it! They're both incredible trailers. The Interstellar was already high up on my list of movies I was looking forward to, and it has quickly shot up there to be one of my most anticipated movies of this year. Stars Matthew McConaughey. It's Christopher Nolan's ode to, you know, space travel.
I don't get it.
You should go to geeklegacy.com and watch the trailer if you haven't seen it yet.
You'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll say, damn, this is great. The other trailer, Guardians of the Galaxy. James Gunn looks to be creating a universe that we can have fun in, and it's also going to have insane action. And it just it brings me back to the first Iron Man movie. This fun little movie that has a serious undertone, but in the end, it's just this badass action movie that you can laugh at. So, what'd you guys think of the trailers?
Great. I think that they will both be excellent movies, Dave.
Sweet.
Interstellar. I don't know about this one.
Yeah, I don't know about it either.
I know you're excited, but
it seems like it has a lot going on, but it's not really telling us what it's about at the same time.
Yeah, Matthew McConaughey built a rocket ship in his cornfield.
Well, Matthew McConaughey wants to go to space. His kids don't. Michael Caine and his corporation, being all corporation-y, they built the spaceship.
But they're using his corn. He's allowed to, he wants to play because they're in his corn.
Yes, and he's an engineer.
So he uses the corn to fuel the rocket.
Yeah, him and Randy's girlfriend Anne Hathaway are gonna pilot the ship.
She's in the movie too?
Yeah, she's in the movie.
Oh my god.
She's the one flying in the trailer. With her mask on.
As Justin Cavender has never said, that is a hard pass.
Yeah.
He says it all the time.
Oh, jeez. Hard pass.
Yeah. So the theme of the movie is man was born on Earth. It wasn't meant to die on Earth. And I think it's a powerful theme that... Did you read the write-up or did you just watch the trailer?
I just watched the trailer.
Oh, okay.
Did you do a nice write-up on
this? As I always do.
It sounds like you're a lobbyist and you want me to see this movie.
what's interesting about the movie is Nolan's not writing a story in which we're trying to save the Earth. We're pretty much giving up on it. And Matthew McConaughey and his team are our only hope in trying to find, to reach beyond our solar system for a place that can sustain our culture. So, you know, every single alien movie where this hive locusts come from a planet they've destroyed and they come and take up our world, this is that in reverse. We're leaving our world to go fuck up their world.
It's interesting. I wrote a short story a couple years ago about the Earth's going to not... People on Earth were not going to make it, and they made a ship to go and travel as far away as possible to see if they could sustain life somewhere else. But the ship comes back 10 years later and everyone's dead. And through video logs and audio logs, we're able to find out how everyone died on the ship. But regardless, everyone that's on Earth isn't going to make it. The resources are all used up.
Nice. I thought you were going to say
that. That sounds like a happy tale.
I'm pretty sure Christopher Nolan got his hands on my little short story. He turned my 12 pages of awesome into a 5-hour movie.
I thought you were going to say the ship came back 10 years later and all humans had been dead for 10 years and now the Earth was better.
Yeah, they all got off the ship. Too.
They all got the ship. They're like, oh, well, that was easy.
Yeah. Wait, that was a story you wrote or that was a story you read?
I wrote.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty
cool. Pretty interesting, man. So yeah, so both those movies look amazing, and you should definitely go to geeklegacy.com and check out the trailers if you haven't already.
Place your bets. Is he going to make it back?
It's Matthew McConaughey? 100%.
Yeah.
Is the planet going to be filled
with... He's going to come back, and he's going to be the same age, and everyone else is going to be older.
Yeah, that's going to be weird.
It's going to be crazy.
How does that happen?
I bet there will be some form of twist when he gets back. But yeah,
I don't see how that's even remotely possible, because... Your body still has to age.
To put them in stasis.
The sun going around the Earth doesn't have any effect on you.
Well, in a lot of space travel sci-fi, though, when you're traveling through space, you're experiencing time differently. So then, especially, I remember like in the Ender's Game universe, when they're traveling through space, if they leave the planet, they're essentially saying goodbye to everyone they ever knew. Mm-hmm. Because by the time they left, went somewhere, and then came back, everyone they knew would already be dead for, like, hundreds of years.
Yeah, I just don't see how that works. I don't have the brain power to understand how my moment in time is less than your moment.
Something about faster-than-light travel. or approaching the speed of light. I don't know. You'd have to ask my brother. He's the science-y person.
But, I mean, I'm on a ship where, you know, we're enclosed in this area. It's like a fly, you know what I mean? Like, when a fly is in your car, you're going 70 miles an hour, but the fly is still going whatever. Like, it's flying around all slow and stupid.
Inside. Put, like, it's like suspended animation. They're freezing you. They're like stopping time.
But I'm, yeah.
It's all relative.
Exactly. And if it's relative, then we should all be aging the same way.
Well, aging is just, aging is your body deteriorating.
Over time.
Over time. But if you're put into some form of, you know, homogenosis to where your body is not deteriorating, you would not be aging.
But if I'm just walking about on the bridge of a ship.
But they're not walking around you. If you watch the trailer, they go into these little pods. Did you watch the trailer, Justin?
I did, but I didn't see pods.
Yeah.
Cornfields and rockets.
They distinctly go into pods.
You know, you hit the stopwatch at the same time. So if you had a stopwatch in there with you in your little pod, it's going to freeze too. That moment in time will freeze.
No.
If you had a stopwatch outside the pod,
it'll still be stopwatch going. It would continue to count. It just wouldn't deteriorate.
I see. Why don't people on Earth put themselves in these crazy pods to keep themselves alive longer?
I don't think they have enough of them. They're probably a special order. Mm-hmm. Probably got a couple for the shuttle.
Interesting.
For the important people, like the president, maybe has one.
I think it's all a ruse.
You mean you're trying to tell me it's not real?
Mm-mm. I think science fiction is fake.
So fake. You got a list, Randy?
I do, indeed. All right. This one's actually kind of fun, and this might appeal to some of our listeners with children. All right. The top 10 actors who only played a particular role because their children told them to. So, number 10 on the list is Richard Harris, who often refused the role of Dumbledore before finally taking it after his granddaughter told him to. So that's kind of fun.
His granddaughter's smarter than him.
Too bad he only was around for, what, the first two movies?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, two.
Yeah. I like the other guy better.
I do, too, but I don't... I don't speak ill of the dead.
Yeah, I mean, I don't either. He just looked too... He looked cliched wizard to me. I don't know. Yeah. Like, he looked like Merlin from fucking Sword in the Stone.
Yeah, too I like Michael Gambone better.
Yeah.
And you know who cast Michael Gambone? Alfonso Cuarón, great director.
Which we didn't even talk about.
Yeah, it's all right.
Number 9. Raul Julia played M. Bison because his kids loved Street Fighter. Speaking of Street Fighter, we were just talking about that movie tonight.
Yeah.
Number 8. Viggo Mortensen only became Aragorn because his son said it would be a good idea.
Yeah, that's nuts.
And it was a great idea.
He's on the serious Peter Jackson hate train right now.
Yeah.
You guys been following that?
I've heard about that, yeah.
I read about it, yeah.
Okay. He said the second half of the second Lord of the Rings, all of Return of the King, and all of the Hobbits are soulless CGI fests.
Yikes.
That Peter Jackson was more interested in playing with his shiny CGI toys than fleshing out characters and telling stories with a soul.
Man. And he was done filming in 2000, but then after Fellowship was such a hit, they had to go back and do a bunch of reshoots.
Yeah, he was saying that he shot more days after Fellowship was released than when they filmed all three movies. He said they had all three movies completely shot and edited together, and after Fellowship was a huge hit, they got a big boost and they got extra money, and Jackson decided he wanted to reshoot, and so they reshot so much for Return of the King and Two Towers that he says that it just obliterated all of the charm that it was originally envisioned. And he had some very hateful things to say about The Hobbit.
That's a bummer.
He must listen to the podcast.
It's too bad. I feel weird about reading stuff like that. Because not that it necessarily changes my opinion of the actor, per se. But it's something that I start to think about when I'm watching the movie. And it's unfortunate because I love the Lord of the Rings trilogy so much that now when Aragorn speaks, someone will be like, man, he's probably hating every second of this movie right now.
Yeah, I just read it as sour grapes that, like, now people are talking about Peter Jackson's new trilogy and he's not involved in the new trilogy, so he has to bash the new trilogy, and then he just kind of goes overboard and bashes.
Well, he was saying that he didn't want to be in it because it was too long. He's like, it's a 300... He even commented on it. He goes, it's a 300-page book. Why is it three movies?
Yeah. Well, money.
Yeah. I mean, we know why it's three movies, but... Right. It's just one of those things.
Punch Mr. Jackson in the dick.
Yeah. What can you do? What's next?
Number 7 on the list, Robert Downey Jr. appeared on Family Guy to impress his son.
Ooh. Iron Man's not good enough, huh?
Yeah, that's a rough kid there.
Alright, I think I'm going to slaughter this guy's name, but number 6, Digimon Hounsou appeared in Guardians of the Galaxy to show his son black people can be superheroes. That's cool.
I always pronounce it Jamon.
Jamon?
Yeah.
Digimon just, sounds fun. Jamon.
He was a bad guy. Even in the future, we can only be back. Is that what he wants to tell his kid?
Number 5. Paul Walker starred in 8 Below because his mom wanted him to take a role that his children could watch.
Oh.
I just want everyone to know that all the dogs live in 8 Below. I don't care if I'm spoiling it for you. I wish someone had told me going in. All the dogs live.
I think I kept that on a podcast once, just so everyone would know.
Oh, yeah. Happy endings.
Yeah.
Good.
There is a dog that you think dies, but it doesn't.
Yeah, and it's adorable because all the other pooches rally around the other dog. And it's kind of like... Where the Red Fern Grows, Homeward Bound.
Where the Red Fern Grows definitely does not.
Yeah. Two dogs die in that book.
Homeward Bound, the one where Michael J. Fox voices one of the dogs, and you don't think the Golden Retriever makes it. But at the end, he runs over the hill and gets reunited with his boy. It's like, yes, this is what movies are for.
Mm-hmm. Number 4. This one's one of Justin's favorites. Tommy Lee Jones became Two-Face because his son loved the character.
Oh, I like
just it. Just not that version of the character.
It's boiling acid!
We should have known. Second Bank of Gotham on the second anniversary.
Holy shit. And what about that sweet right down the middle line of damaged face?
Oh my God.
I don't think that could have been done any perfect.
And why is Batman in the courtroom in full Batman gear?
Why not?
Like he runs out to like save Harvey when he gets like splattered. So are we to assume that Batman just chills out in court?
Maybe he was called in as a witness or something.
Yeah.
He's an expert witness.
Why didn't he use his batarang?
How do you subpoena Batman?
The bat symbol.
He should have used his batarang to hit the mobster guy in the hand when he was about to chuck his acid.
The problem is he probably housed the acid in a lightsaber, and no one will ever see that coming. That's why it's so effective.
I think we're just Monday morning quarterbacking Mr. Batman there.
Mm-hmm.
I think like 8 of the first like 10 things said in Batman Forever are terrible. Like I'll get your right through.
Oh, that's pretty bad. Or the fact that a doctor doesn't know that bats are mammals.
I never got that.
She earned her degree online. Shit.
University of Phoenix. It's the Harvard of online education.
Wait, what did you think they were?
We're flying rodents.
Well, rodents are still mammals.
That's true. Oh, so Batman's the asshole. Bats aren't rodents, doctor.
You should be like, you know, my parents were killed in front of me. Should be every argument. But you know, my parents were murdered in front of me.
Yeah.
I would have picked the movie. You know, my parents were murdered in front of me.
Okay. What was the next one, Randy?
The next one is number 3. Michael Sheen took a role in Twilight to surprise his daughter. Ah! You okay?
Yeah, he's the one of the Volturi.
Weird.
He's the main Volturi that reads people's thoughts. Gosh.
I don't remember this. Wait. Is that the first movie?
Oh, for crying out loud. He shows up in the second one.
I haven't seen the second one.
The last one.
I haven't seen the last one either.
Oh my god.
I've only seen the first one, and that was with comedians interrupting it.
What?
They're
like a riff tracks, or
yeah, like a I did see the riff tracks, and then during SF Sketchfest there was this live show where at one of the theaters they're playing Twilight, and then there's a bunch of comedians making fun of the movie.
You want to know something funny about that? First Twilight's actually not that bad a movie. It's pretty good. I'm not going to lie. I enjoyed the first Twilight.
I watched the first two, but I haven't seen any since.
I thought the first one was enjoyable.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
It's pretty ridiculous.
I enjoyed it enough to watch the second.
Yeah, it started going downhill after that, but yeah.
Okay, guys.
All right. Number two. This one's also for Justin. Frank Langella played Skeletor for his son, and it became his favorite role.
I like it. I dare anything. I am Skeletor. Come on.
But I mean, let's be honest though. He's a pretty rad Skeletor. Like that movie has a lot of faults, but Skeletor is not one of them. Like he's pretty badass.
He's fucking the man.
He's scary.
Actually, it looks pretty cool. Yeah.
At the beginning, when he's walking with a staff and smashing it against the floor on Grayskull, that's awesome.
Yeah, Skeletor's pretty rad.
And he's like, "People of Eternia, I done fucked your sorceress, and I got Grayskull, and He-Man's next on my list."
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, really liking that scene, like where they show like the exterior of like Eternia, and like they got all these like giant holograms of Skeletor talking.
Mm-hmm.
That movie's actually pretty good until they get to Earth.
Yep.
And then it's like,
that movie's cool. Well, I mean, the beginning is cool.
Right. Or I guess you could argue
Dolph Lundgren looks like He-Man.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit, that guy, he speaks Russian. He's huge, and he's He-Man.
You could probably argue that the movie goes south once you introduce Gwildor.
Yeah, that was dumb.
Yeah.
It was like the Orko substitute.
Yeah. This is pre-CGI, or he couldn't do Orko.
Yeah. I love He-Man. He's the master of the universe.
It's an honorary title. Who made you master?
Yeah, it's too bad.
Sorceress gave me a sword.
She's kind of a nut job, dude. She wears like a bird skeleton on her head.
Well, isn't it masters of the universe plural? Isn't there more than one?
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's the T-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
Ah.
That's when they knew that She-Ra was going to be a thing. They just hadn't pitched it to the studio yet.
Like Ram Man.
Yeah.
He nose hose.
Nose hose. Dude, I was laughing so hard when I just replayed that conversation that we had. Just the names of those characters is so stupid. Skunkor, Many Faces.
They were all very on the nose.
Awesome. Yeah. It's like they were just making these prototypes and some asshole on the line was writing the names of them before they packaged them.
Like some 7-year-old man. He's like, he's Beast Man.
So bad. Love it. It's just like in with like Spaceballs. Like, sir, do you think we're being too literal? Like, with the coma of the desert. Oh my god, it's nuts. Love it. I want some more of it. Was that number two?
That was number one, and this is a gentleman that David and I were just talking about earlier today. Anthony Mackie became the Falcon so he could be an inspiration to "quote unquote" kids of color.
Ooh. See, I buy that one.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about pain and gain.
Yeah.
Ooh, nice.
Fine list.
Sweet list.
Do you guys want to play a game?
Yay, game.
I woke up this morning only to play a game.
Ooh. I kind of wanted to do this game after we found out that Bob Hoskins passed away. We talked about that Who Framed Roger Rabbit was our favorite movie of his. And I've watched like 3 times in the last 2 weeks.
Oh man!
And
you're asking the questions,
right? So now I want to just test all of our knowledge in Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Now, the answer to these, and that's too bad because you only have to have seen this movie in order to get any of these questions. I'm not giving you any outside trivia of any sort. If you've seen the movie, you can answer these questions.
Cool.
Fair enough?
Excellent.
Shout it out when you know it. If you guess wrong, obviously your turn is done. Some questions do have a little bonus question tied to them. The person that got the original question correct gets to answer that bonus question first. However, if that answer is incorrect, then it opens up to the floor. Sound good?
Yep.
Okay. Here we go. Are you guys ready?
Ready.
Perfect. What was the name of the maroon cartoon being filmed at the beginning of the movie featuring dear friends Roger Rabbit and Baby Herman?
Tummy Trouble?
No,
Tummy Trouble is the...
That's the one before Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, I think.
Oh, okay.
Oh, man. It's in the kitchen. What's cooking?
Close. Dang. Amanda, do you got a guess?
Oh, I can't remember.
Something's cooking.
Oh!
Bonus points if you can tell me the name of the director of that cartoon.
Roger Rabbit?
Schleicher.
It's a fictional director.
Roger Rabbit's fictional.
Isn't his name like Maurice or something like that?
It's Raoul.
Raoul, okay.
Yeah.
Some ridiculous name.
It's like Raoul R. Arul or something like that. It's something stupid. Raoul J. Raoul, all that stuff.
Yeah, because B.B. Herman actually talks to him, so something
mentions
his name.
Yeah. It's like, Raoul, I'll be in my trailer. Okay, number two. Roger Rabbit usually only wears three articles of clothing. Can you name all three?
A bow tie, pants, and suspenders?
Negative.
Damn it. Vest.
He is wearing suspenders, but they're overalls.
Oh, yeah, it's overalls.
Piece. Oh.
Bow tie. Shit.
Shoes.
No shoes.
No shoes.
Gloves.
Gloves. God damn it.
Yellow gloves.
Damn it. The fact that he has a cartoon blinded me to the fact that he's wearing gloves.
I know.
Because the freaking Disney characters, it's just like part of their bodies almost.
Right. This guy wearing yellow gloves. All right. The rabbit's wife works at the nightclub called the Ink and Paint Club. Tune review. Humans only. What's the password to gain entry to the
nightclub? Walt sent me.
I heard David first. Bonus points if you can tell me the name of the song Jessica Rabbit sings at the club.
Why don't you do right?
Correct.
Why don't you? Thank you, Randy.
David gets the answer first for the bonus question because he got the lead. Correct.
Son of a cocksucker.
So we'll go ahead and give David.
Thanks, Randy. You're a true pal.
We'll give David the point for that. I think he knew the answer anyway, but we'll give him the 2 points for that. All right, number four. Who needs a car in L.A. when we got the best public transportation in the world? That is until it's bought out by which company?
Cloverleaf.
Randy is correct.
Wait, what was it?
Cloverleaf.
Oh.
Randy.
I don't remember this stuff at all.
Who's going to rent that?
They bought the red car? All right. What's the name of the pub where Eddie Valiant's girlfriend Dolores works?
It's a damn fine question.
It is.
Mm.
Time's up. The Terminal Station Bar.
Oh.
Wow.
Wouldn't have got that.
Nope.
Not me either.
Clearly, I haven't seen Roger Rabbit in recently enough.
You only ever see it like when he looks over after he sees that Cloverleaf bought the red car. He looks over to the pub and then he goes down the steps. Okay. Every tune knows when you're in trouble, you go to Valiant and Valiant. Of course, there's only Eddie now, but before he worked with his brother to solve high-profile cases. What was his brother's name?
Joe.
No.
Darn it. I'm just guessing.
Three, two,
Bob.
Theodore, a.k.a. Teddy. You see his nameplate?
Mm-hmm. And he calls
Eddie at one point in the movie. All right. Everyone's still doing fine. This is still anyone's game. David has 2. Randy has 1. Amanda is not on the board yet. All right. Number 7. What piece of evidence is a forensic expert collecting at the Acme warehouse where Marvin Acme met his demise?
Paint from a glove on a rope.
Correct.
Dang.
Ain't from the rabbit's glove, he says. Randy has 2. Bonus points if you can tell me which gag is Acme's number one seller.
Oh.
Is it the hand buzzer?
Right. Randy now has 3 points. When combined together, these 3 ingredients form a lethal combination for tunes known as...
Turpentine, acetone, benzene?
Perfect. Randy with 4. Turpentine, acetone, benzene. You are 100% correct. On a roll. Okay, here's a fun one. Roger Rabbit had a hard time finding Eddie's place. In fact, he spoke to 5 different people before coming in contact with the liquor store guy. Name 3 of the 5 sources that didn't know where Eddie's office was.
Okay, mailman.
Nope.
Oh, really? Well, fuck me.
Okay.
All right.
The butcher. The baker. Shit.
Not the mailman.
No. I don't know. I can't think of a 3rd one.
Amanda, go.
The bouncer?
That's good, though.
That's like the only one who's...
The newsboy, the fireman, they didn't know. The green grocer, the butcher, and the baker.
Oh.
Wow.
Should ask the mailman. He knows where everyone lives.
Yeah. Which song is quite a loony selection for a bunch of drunken reprobates?
The Merry-Go-Round Broke Down.
Randy, you are hot with 5. Merry-Go-Round Broke Down. Bonus points if you can name the secret room used to keep Roger safe at the Terminal Station Bar.
Something about rot gut?
That's correct. It's a rot gut room. Holdover from Prohibition. Roger ends up calling it a speakeasy, a gin mill, a hooch bar. So that's 6. Randy's killing it. So that's actually the game, but I have a bonus round if you guys want to go for it.
Sure.
Okay.
Bring it on.
What is the name of Judge Doom's construction plan of epic proportions? We're talking 8 lanes of shimmering cement.
Freeway.
Correct. From here to Pasadena. Smooth, safe, fast.
Who's going to ride that? Or are you going to ride the red line for a nickel?
I actually heard Randy first.
I guess I didn't watch Who Framed Roger Rabbit as much as I thought I had.
Oh.
Just need to give you the heads up.
Or, no. Well, he even tried
to cheat for you.
I know. I just forgot. I totally forgot. Well, my brothers and I used to watch it all the time, but I think maybe that's my problem. I watched it when I was really young. Mm-hmm. When... probably a lot of the movie went right over my head.
That's the game. Good job, everyone.
For once, Dave didn't have all the movie trivia.
Yeah.
Sad. I mean, clearly, I need to watch Roger Rabbit. I probably haven't seen it in like 10 years.
I know. I don't think I've seen it since childhood either, but I saw it so much that it just got burned into my memory. That, and we quote the movie a lot. So.
Yes. It's probably one of our most quoted movies. Well, that does it for this week's episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. I'd like to give a quick shout-out to our friend Mr. Scott Murray, a.k.a. Merchman, on the Assembly of Geeks Podcast. He just launched a new blog available for your viewing pleasure at BigDamnFanboy.com. Check it out! Please, like us on Facebook, follow us on the Twitter there, at Geek Legacy, and check out the other podcasts in our network, including the Pixelated Podcast and the Comic Corner Podcast. Remember to visit GeekLegacy.com for all your geek news and reviews, and we will talk to you next week! Thank you.